Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the rackets when we come back. You know, those who already walk submissively will say that there's no cause for alarm, but submissiveness is not our heritage. The First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage. And the Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people, and the Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and expression of the press, of political and social activities free from government surveillance. Now, you know, I wished I'd have thought of that. But that quotation comes from Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas. Now, our princes, the policymakers, who beller in the halls of Congress for more taxes, more spending, and more gun control, we haven't heard anything out of those people of any intelligent moment in more than 75 years now, have we? That's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left in America comes from our courts, not from our political processes, not from our politicians, not from our lawyers or our bureaucrats. Old Mayor Rothschild summed it up with a flair when he said, "You give me the money power, and I care not who makes the laws." Well, I say, give me the judicial power, and I care not who makes the laws either, because the real power in America is in our courts. It's not in our politics. Now, if you'd like to tap into that power of the judicial system, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. And be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. That number, again, is 417-273-4967. Now, courtroom strategy and procedures available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? All right, we're talking about the rackets, and last time I pointed out to you that there's about 20 of them, you know, that I just sat down here and started doodling on a pad. Religion is a racket. Banking, lawyers, the law, the legal system is a racket. The lottery is a racket. Insurance and government regulation are rackets. Income tax is a racket. So I looked up the word racket in Webster's dictionary, and it says that it's a person who gets money which is not legal, which is dishonest. He gets it by fraud, he gets it by threat, or he gets it by harming you. Now, that's the racketeer. So, a racket, then, is an illegal enterprise which is designed to defraud you. Now, a fraud is a lie. See, I'm not going to harm you. I'm not going to beat you up. I'm not going to give you a black eye. I'm not going to burn your store down. I'm going to lie to you, and I'm going to defraud you. The lottery is a classic example of this lie, this fraud. If you buy this lottery ticket for $1, you could win $80 million, or $1 million, or $5 million, or whatever they're advertising. Now, that's certainly true. That's a true statement. If you buy this lottery ticket, you could win $10 million, or $1,000, or $500, or $30, or... Yeah, that's true. Now, what's your chances of winning, statistically, mathematically? The answer is 84 million to 1. what that boils down to, when you buy a lottery ticket, which used to be called, when the mafia was running the lottery, they called it the numbers racket. The numbers racket. And it was run by organized crime. You know, the mafia, the Cosa Nostra, they had what they called the rackets, plural. They had more than one. Loan sharking was a racket. Well, here's something that's poignant on the point, and it is that all of these rackets are illegal activities. They may violate the laws of the United States, or they may violate the laws of Colorado or Germany or France or South Africa, or they may violate the laws of God. But here's one thing that they all have in common. Every single racket is a violation of some law somewhere. It's a criminal activity, which is why people love it. People love it. All of these rackets, people line up for. For instance, religion. 65% of Americans line up, go to church every week. They love it. It's a racket. They're getting ripped off. But they don't know that. Or if they know it, they disregard it. I don't see any great duty that I have to come out here and report to you that religion is a racket and you're being lied to and stolen from. What difference does it make to me if you get lied to and stolen from? I'm not losing any money by you being lied to and stolen from. It's your choice in life. If you want to get ripped off by the lottery or by the religion or the banking system or the lawyers, or I mean, it's a choice that you make in life. Now, sometimes these choices are kind of foisted off on us, you know, like insurance, for instance. Now, insurance is a racket. It's a racket because insurance, by definition, is called limited liability. You want to limit your liability. You don't want to be responsible for liabilities that you might incur. Now, that violates the biblical principle and injunction, the biblical statute, the law of God that says that practicing limited liability violates the Ten Commandments. It violates with specificity the Eighth Commandment that says, thou shalt not steal. And so that statute, which you'll find in Exodus chapter 21, verses 28 through 36, demands strict liability. The opposite to insurance is strict liability. You have to be responsible for all of your own actions. So there's these two principles of law. Now, you don't want to be responsible for all of your actions. You want somebody else to be responsible. So by paying a premium to somebody called an insurance company, they will take that liability. And then your costs in this event, you know, a traffic accident, let's say, is limited to the deductible and the premium. So the premium, let's say, is $800 a year, which is about the national average, plus a $500 deductible is limited to $1,300. Okay? All right. Now, the deductibles go up and down. I mean, the deductible can be $1,000, and then it can be more than that, it can be $5,000. But I want to give you a kind of an idea here as to how this is a ripoff when we talk about auto insurance or we talk about the lottery and vaccinations and so on, and why it is that it's so appealing. See, you buy insurance. You have insurance on your house, on your car, probably on your life, on your health. You might even have insurance, you know, that covers your bank account, you know, FDIC insured, so on. And insurance, you know, here in America, and I would imagine wherever you live in the world, is probably pretty common. Everybody's got it. Everybody does it. Unless you make a conscious effort to avoid insurance, you've got some. And here's the political campaign come along. Then we give you health care insurance. National health care insurance. It's actually called socialized medicine, is what they're selling. Now, they're not telling you, hey, what we're selling here is socialized medicine. That's got a stigma to it. It doesn't work. So what they do is they say, well, what we want to do is we want to have our healthcare system, which is capitalistic, but we want to have insurance. Oh, okay. National healthcare insurance. So what we're going to do is we're going to label it something else, but we're going to introduce a racket nationwide in healthcare insurance. That's what that boils down to. and the people love it. Now, the reason the people love it is because it's illegal. It's the fruit of the poisonous tree. You know, it's Adam and Eve, you know, eating off of the forbidden fruit. That's the thing that makes these rackets so good, makes them so alluring, so desirable. That's why we buy it, because it's illegal. If it were legal, we wouldn't have anything to do with it. Now, here's something that's legal that obeys God and keeps His commandments. It's called strict liability. Well, you don't want to be strictly liable for all of your damages. Well, you could have an auto accident and cause $100,000 worth of damage, and they could come take your house and car and give you a lien. You have to make payments for years and years on end to pay off this damage. You don't want to do that. Now, insurance companies, you know, must really be dumb because they want to take on your liabilities. I mean, think about it. You don't want this liability, but here comes a salesman along and says, hey, listen, give us $500, give us $800, give us a $1,000 premium, and we'll take that nasty liability away. You can go out and have a $100,000 accident, and we'll pay for it. You won't have to. Well, now, either this insurance company is stupid. I mean, how else could you word it? If you're smart and you want to shift this liability onto somebody else because you don't want it, and somebody else comes along and says, I'll take it. I'll take the liability. Well, then either you're real smart and they're real stupid, or there's something you don't know and they're real smart and you're real stupid. Now, it's got to be one or the other. Now, insurance companies make a lot of money. Man, let's just take a look at a couple of three of them. You know, you take a look at some of the buildings that these insurance companies build, and they build these multi-story skyscrapers in downtown New York. Now, if you're an insurance company or a bank, you ever notice that banks build great big tall buildings too? Those buildings cost a lot of money. So let me ask you this: how many multi-story office buildings in downtown Manhattan do you own? And if you're like me, the answer is none. I don't have any. Now, how many big office buildings does, let's say, Money, M-O-N-Y, or Mutual of Omaha own? Oh, the answer is, oh, God, they've got big multi-story buildings all over America. They got them everywhere. Every major city. Just like Bank of America. My God, they've got big buildings everywhere. Now, those big buildings cost a lot of money. And the institutions, the insurance companies that build those big buildings, make a lot of money. How do they make a lot of money? By taking on your liabilities. And the liabilities of millions of people like you. Let me give you an illustration. You go down and you buy a policy for auto insurance, and the national average, it's probably around $1,000 now. I'm giving you some numbers here. It was $800 here a few years back, but I guess with inflation it's probably up to $1,000. And then you get a deductible. Now, the deductibles used to be $250. I can remember when I first bought my first auto insurance policy, the deductible was $100. And then slowly but surely they went up to $1,000, and you know, or $500, and then $1,000 and so on. In fact, you can the higher the deductible, the lower your premiums. And so if you elect to take a $5,000 deductible, which means that if you have an accident and it's $2,000, you just pay for it yourself. If you have an accident that's $100,000, the insurance company pays $95,000 and you pay $5. See how that works? But you don't have to pay the higher premiums. So, you know, it balances out. Let's just take an $800 premium, that's a few years back, and let's take a $500 deductible, which is pretty standard, that's $1,300. So you have an accident, and your liability for this calendar year is limited to $1,300. How much is the average auto accident in America? How much does it cost? Do you know? Have you ever thought about it? Now, you're aware of some headline makers, you know, like $1 million wreck or $5 million wreck or something like that. But how often do $1 million and $5 million accidents occur? Well, there are more fender benders in the parking lot than there are million-dollar accidents. I mean, that just goes without saying. I mean, you don't have to be real smart to figure that out. And so the answer to the question is, how much does the average auto accident cost? Now, if you get your pencil out, write this down. It's $1,835. So write down $1,835. And if you want to, just round it off to $2,000. So in America, there's going to be about 6 million automobile accidents this year. In any given calendar year, about 6 million accidents out of about a, I think there's 200 million cars in the country. So about 3% of those cars are going to be involved in an accident this year. 3% of the cars will be involved in an accident. And the accident, on average, is going to cost $1,835, rounded off to $2,000. Now, next question is, how often should you expect to have an automobile accident? So if we're going to have 6 million auto accidents out of a population of 300 million people, of which about 200 million of them are licensed to drivers, so about 3% are going to have an auto accident. So when you multiply that out, that means that, or you divide it out, over a period of 32 years, you should expect to have one of these $1,835 accidents. Can you follow that? I mean, just this isn't rocket science now. This is just, if you've been to the third grade, this is about third grade math. Third grade math. Maybe fourth grade. You know, you might have to finish the third grade, and maybe you got to be in the fourth grade to work out these numbers here. But, I mean, hell, most of you people have degrees after your names. Most of you people out there listening to me right now, you know, you got a college degree. Surely you got a high school diploma. All right, so you should be able to work out the math here. And I got these numbers now off the Internet. You do a Google search on insurance, and most of you people are computer literate. Hell, I'm not even computer literate. I don't even know how to turn it on. I got to have a computer operator. I go up and I ask him. I say, hey, give me this information. And he punches all the buttons, comes back, and gives me these written reports. We get it right off the Internet. We get it right out of the insurance industry. These are their numbers. I don't write these numbers up. I wouldn't have a clue as to what the average auto accident costs in America. I don't know. I have to look it up. I have to go find out. And I did. It's $1,835. And how many auto accidents are there every year? 6 million. And how many drivers? 200 million. And so once every 32 years, you should have an auto accident that costs $1,835. Now, let's ask the question, well, how much money are you paying on insurance premiums? Okay. Now, I've got my famous Sharp EL 1197G cranked up and ready to go here. Let's multiply it up. You're paying $800 a year in insurance premiums. So we plug in 800 times 32 years, and that's $25,600. Okay, $25,600. So you're going to pay that much in premium. And then you're going to have an automobile accident, and on average, it's going to cost you $1,835. So let's take $25,600, and let's plug that in. Let's take $1,835, and let's subtract it. So the insurance company gets paid $23,765. That's their net. And your net is $1,835 less the $500 deductible. Okay? So let's take $500 from $1,835, and that gives us $1,335. All right. So out of $25,600, which you're going to pay in premiums, you're going to collect $1,335. $1,335, which means that the insurance company nets $24,265 on the transaction over the life of your driving career. Isn't that just real special? Now, it's a racket because I don't know if the insurance industry is making too much profit. I don't have a clue. I'm not a moralist. I'm not here to tell you that's unconscionable profit. It's a business deal. It's a business transaction. You're going to give up your liability. In other words, you're going to surrender your personal liability over the next 32 years and pay somebody $24,265, and they in turn are going to pay you $1,300. So out of the $25,600, you get $1,335. Is that good business? Now, you're sitting there saying, well, yeah, but I could have a $1 million accident. Well, that's true. There's going to be some of those out there. And that's the vagaries of life, isn't it? See, if you're average, you're going to have one accident every 32 years. You know, there are some people that never have any accidents at all. And there's other people that have lots of accidents. When you average them all out, you know, if you were a careful driver, and I had two accidents in my whole life. Well, I had three. But two of them got reported, one of them didn't. So I've had three accidents in my whole life. Now I'm an old man, 70 years old, and I used to drive truck, and I put on probably 1,000,000 miles driving truck. I bet you I've driven more miles than the average driver. And I've only had three accidents. And the three accidents, if you total them all up, what is the total amount of money that was involved in the three accidents? It wouldn't amount to $2,000 out of all three of them. That's how much total damage was done in three accidents by me. It wouldn't total $2,000. But I bought auto insurance for many years. I don't anymore. I quit doing that because that auto insurance, you know, is a bad business, a bad deal. And there's other ways for you to assume that liability, like strict liability. I mean, you could practice strict liability in America today in place of auto insurance. Most people don't know that, don't know how, wouldn't care anyway. And that's because most people like the rackets. That's why these rackets flourish. These rackets flourish because the people, that is the customers, love it. They want it. They desire it. So I don't feel sorry for people, you know, that are poor. I watch the TV every once in a while, and there was a big hurricane just occurred down in the Gulf. And these people, you know, their houses are knocked down and their lives are disrupted. And I look at that and I say, God, I'm glad that isn't happening to me. And so I've looked at that for many, many years. And so I said, you know, I need to protect myself from that. Now, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but did you know that 50% of Americans, 50% of Americans live within 30 miles of the ocean here in America? God, I saw that number and I said, wow, that's really amazing. 50%, half of us live within 30 miles of the ocean. Houston's about 50 miles from the ocean. You saw all the damage done there? Woo. Hey, living down there along the Gulf Coast isn't exactly the best place to live. Well, you know, as it relates to hurricane. Here in the Midwest, we have tornadoes. But those tornadoes, you know, when they hit your house is toast, but they don't hit very many houses. Yeah, they cause some damage and kill some people, but nowhere near what these hurricanes do. So, you know, you people live down there because you want to. I mean, you built your house down there on the Gulf Coast because that's where you wanted to live. Now, a hurricane comes by, blows your house down. And so what are you people down on the Gulf Coast saying? Well, we want the rest of you Americans now to pony up your tax dollars and rebuild our houses. This is the American way. I'm sitting here saying, well, that may be the American way today. It wasn't the American way 100 years ago. It wasn't the American way in the minds of our constitutional framers. And it's not my frame of mind today, so I'm not going to help you people rebuild your houses down there. I empathize with you, and I'm sorry that happened. And I might even help you. You know, if I met some guy and he says, "Hey, my house blew down over here. I've got a third tithe can in here. Hell, I'd probably help you with it." That's what third tithe is about. It's what charity is all about. You know, I'm not opposed to charity. I'm not opposed to helping people. But, you know, in life, we make decisions. You make a decision to buy a lottery ticket. you make a decision to buy an insurance policy. Now, sometimes it's kind of forced on you, like this auto insurance. But, you know, you bought your health insurance. You know, you're sitting out, you're one of those 44 million people without health insurance. Did you know that George Gordon doesn't have any health insurance? And I'm avoiding health insurance just as hard as I can. I'm running as fast as I can to get as far, put as much distance between me and Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton as I can. I can't run any faster. An old man like me, I just can't get away from those people fast enough to stay the hell away from health insurance. And they're coming around. Do you know 44 million Americans don't have health insurance? You know, it's a right. Every American should have health insurance. I didn't know it was a right, and I didn't know every American should have health insurance. I'm here to tell you this American shouldn't have health insurance, doesn't want health insurance, and I'm running as fast as I can to get the hell away from it, because it's a racket. I don't want any part of it. Now, I don't know about you. Maybe you think that paying the insurance industry $25,000 for $1,300 is a good business transaction. I think that's stupid. That's just my personal opinion. Now, that's just auto insurance. Now, I'm going to tell you one more factor on this auto insurance. Out of every dollar that you pay on auto insurance, do you know how much the insurance industry pays out in claims? Because I trained as an insurance claims adjuster when I was a young man in my 20s. And I went to a school. I think it was the Universal. I forgot the name of it. Universal something school. On insurance adjusting. It's back in the 1960s. And at the time I went to school, the insurance industry was paying out 5 cents out of every premium dollar in claims for auto wrecks, automobile claims. That was in 1964 or 65. All right. Do you know how much the insurance industry is paying out today? And they have been complaining for years and years. Oh my God, our costs are going up. Well, we've got to have laws, and we've got to have new rules and regulations, and so. And they did. And their costs have gone up dramatically. Their costs have doubled. It now costs 11 cents. So when an insurance company ponies up, or you go to the insurance company, you pony up $1. The insurance company pockets 89 cents, and they pay out 11 cents in claims. I don't know if that's the right profit margin or not. Seemed like to me that when they were taking in 95 cents and paying out 5 cents, it was better for them, but what the hell? You're taking in 100 cents and you're paying out 11, you're making 89. There's some other costs that go on top of that, but, you know, that's a pretty good profit margin. I mean, hell, if you're in the pizza business, you know, or you're running a store or you're running a garage, are you getting 89 cents out of every revenue dollar coming in the door? Huh? I don't, and I don't know of very many businesses that do. Insurance does. Banking does. You know, there's some businesses that do that. But, again, I thought I'd point that out to you, that insurance is a racket. It's a racket because it violates the law of God. It's popular. You have it. You want it. You desire it. You're being ripped off by it. And I'm sitting here saying, well, if that's what you want, it's a choice that you make, get after it. Now, if you'd like to know how to get out of insurance, you know, what takes the place of insurance? Individual responsibility. How do I practice the eighth commandment? How do I stop practicing the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and how do I practice the 10 commandments? Because, see, here in America, we used to practice the 10 commandments, and we didn't have compulsory auto insurance when we practiced the 10 commandments. Now we practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and we have auto insurance. Now, I'm not here to tell you people that you should give up your auto insurance or your health insurance or your life insurance. I mean, hell, it's a choice for you to make. But I wanted to point out that it's a racket. It's a racket that makes a lot of money for the insurance industry. It makes a lot of money for government. There are lots of people that make a lot of profit and live very well off of the insurance industry. God love them. They need to make money too. But could it be that maybe they should make their money doing something honest? You know, instead of something that's illegal, dishonest, fraudulent, or uses threat or harm to people, do you think maybe they should do something else with their lives? You know, like be honest and go out and get an honest job and produce something for the society and make a profit off of it. All right, I got to give you a reminder here. We're at the halfway point talking about the rackets. I've got 20 of them written down here. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. It's sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Now, once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the rackets. I'm going to give you one more example here on insurance, because insurance is kind of a big one, and all of us practice insurance. And I, years ago, got interested. See, I'm an old-timey general contractor. And I used to work on fire jobs. And one of my first experiences with the fire insurance system was when it was in Oakland, California, at the Harrison Apartments on Harrison Street. And we had a fire in one of our apartments. And so I came in. Now, there was two companies in Oakland that got all of the fire insurance business. Two companies specialized in fire insurance. Now, since we owned this particular building, you know, and I'm a general contractor, we said to ourselves, well, why don't we get this job? So we went to our insurance agent, and we said, well, we'd like to bid on this job. And the insurance agent sent me over to the adjuster, and the adjuster explained to me that there was a 10% kickback. Yeah, this is a bribe, a 10% kickback that he took, that the insurance company took. I don't know where this 10% is going to go. He said that it's the insurance company that's going to get it. I kind of suspected it was the claims adjuster. And I reported it to the insurance company. I don't know what they ever did about it. But, you know, right's right and wrong's wrong. Now, just ethically and legally and morally, when there's a job and it goes up for competitive bid. The way the system is supposed to work, you and I and everybody else go out and look at the job, and then we try to come up with a number. We say, in this particular case, we thought we could repair this fire job for $14,000. Now, the Rose Company bid $18,000 on the job, and the other company bid $22,000. So you got $22,000, $18,000, and $14,000. Now, that's quite a spread. Now, we came in with the low bid, $14,000, and I left a lot of money on the table. But I bid the job in just based upon what I saw and what I was going to do to fix it. And I had a $7,000 profit in there for myself, and I'm presuming that the Rose Company had a $9,000 profit, and the other company had an $11,000 profit. Because we typically, in the contracting business, keystone our markup. So if a contractor is bidding on a job that he's doing for you, and he bids $20,000, the real cost of doing the job is $10,000, and he's going to make a $10,000 profit. So there's a little piece of information for you. So next time you go to have a room added on to your house and you want to ask the question, should I put the room on myself or should I call a contractor out? You know, you call a contractor and you get three contractors. They come out and they bid on the job. You know, they're supposed to be totally disconnected with one another. Now, I can tell you from personal experience that a lot of times these contracting companies, they divide up the work. Since there's two companies that specialize in fire insurance, those two guys, their bids persons, will go out, bid on the job, and then they'll go have coffee down at Winchell's Donuts. And one will say, well, I'm bidding $22,000. The other says, well, we're bidding $18,000 on the job. That's $4,000 on the table. So why don't you raise your bid to 21.5, and we'll leave my bid in at $22,000, and I'll win the bid at $22,000. Then the next time that there is a fire, I'll give you the job. See? Now that's called collusion. That's called fraud. They're not supposed to do that. And so in this case, there was the third company came in there, and we got the bid for $14,000. This guy told me that I'm supposed to give him $1,400 in order to get the bid. And I told the guy he could kiss off, and I reported it to the insurance company. And as it turned out, we got the job. Yeah, we got the job by hook or by crook. I don't know, I'm not quite sure how. And I didn't pay him the $1,400. But then here's what's going to happen. Later on, I went to the same insurance company and said, I'd like to bid on your jobs. And, you know, I never got another bid from that point. I could go out and look at a job, but I'd never get it. They wouldn't give it to me. That's because I wouldn't pay them the 10%. Wouldn't pay them the 10% kickback. It's dishonest. It's illegal. It's unethical. And I wouldn't do it. And I never got another fire job in the city of Oakland, California. All right, now that's the way that game is played. So if you think that there's honesty out there in the marketplace, you're like a virgin in Hollywood. You know, you're just raw meat out here. All right, now let's take a look at the fire insurance business in Boise, Idaho, because I got to looking at this and I was curious to know how much profit do the insurance companies make in a city of about 100,000 people, which is what Boise was at that time. I guess it's double that now, but back in the 1970s and 80s when I lived there, it was about 100,000 people. So I took a look, and I wanted to know what the average cost was for fires and what the average premium was, and so on. So I got all the numbers together. And here's an interesting statistic. How often does a house burn to the ground in Boise, Idaho? Total loss, 100% loss. And surprising to me, now this is about 1983 when I did this survey, the last house to burn to the ground in Boise, Idaho was 1957. That's why they have all these fire stations all over the city, paid for by taxpayers. So the taxpayers are out here paying for all these fire stations all over the city in your property tax. All right. So I said to you, I said, government and government regulation is a ripoff. It's a fraud. And that's building all these fire stations. That's a fraud. But we want them. I mean, I'm not here to tell you that it isn't a desirable thing to have a fire station 3 blocks from your house. You probably would like to have 2 fire stations. In fact, where I lived up on the first bench, I had 3 fire stations within 6 blocks of my house. All of them in different districts now. But, you know, I was within 6 blocks of Americana, 6 blocks of Orchard, and 6 blocks of Fairview. So here I am in my, just happened to be in my little district. Now, I'm in the Americana Fire District. You know, if there was a fire, they would send out the trucks, you know, from Americana Firehouse. But, hell, there's 2 others within 6 blocks of my house also. So Boise's got good fire coverage. All right. Now, the average fire is $14,000. I don't know if you're aware of this, but the average fire is $14,000. At least it was at that time. Now, let's suppose you've got a $100,000 house, and you have a fire. Typically, the fire is in the kitchen, and it's called what we call a grease fire, and it's going to cause $14,000 worth of damage. Most of it's smoke, but, you know, we got to clean up your house, but, you know, we got to put back the cabinets and buy you a new stove or something like that. And when we get through with this job over here, we're going to make a $7,000 profit, and $7,000 is going to go for the cost of actually doing the work. So you got $7,000 worth of hardware and $7,000 worth of profit coming out of this average job back in 1983. Now, the insurance company requires that you carry full insurance coverage. So let's suppose that if you knew, for instance, that your house worth $100,000 on average is going to have a $14,000 fire, so let's just carry $20,000 worth of insurance on your house. That'd make a lot of sense. Do you know how much you're going to get paid if you have a fire? $2,000. So what they're going to do is they're going to pay you 1/5 of the actual coverage. So they're going to take 14%, you say 14% of the value of your house, which is the price of the fire, and then they're going to divide that out, and they're going to give you the percentage out of your $20,000 coverage, and they're going to pay you $2,800. That's the final number you're going to get. So you have to carry. The insurance company, they're fraudsters, and so they require that you carry full coverage. You're going to carry $100,000 worth of coverage. Because, see, if you're only carrying $20,000 worth of coverage, you wouldn't be paying the same premium. Instead of paying $500 a year, you'd be paying $100. All right. Now, the fire is only going to cost the insurance company $14,000, so on average. And so, you know, the logic behind it is the insurance company isn't losing anything, but, you know, they're fraudsters. And so they come along and say, well, we got this formula. And see, they go to the legislature, and they get the legislature to pass the laws that they want to fit their formula, their policy, so that you have to pay it, and it's legal. Now, insurance, remember, is limited liability, and God prohibits it, tells you don't do that. And you're not going to follow the Ten Commandments, you're going to follow the Ten Planks. So you're going to buy this insurance. So you're going to get ripped off in the process. But it's all right because everybody else is getting ripped off, and as long as you're getting ripped off with everybody else, you're happy. And the theory is, if everybody's doing it, then it must be right. Now there's a kicker comes in here with this fire. I next wanted to know, well, how often do we have fires in Boise? Boise, Idaho, city of 100,000 people. The answer is they have 52 fires a week, 1 a week. Or excuse me, 52 fires a year, that's 1 a week. On average. Got 1 fire every week. Alright, so now, I did not find out what the fire budget was. I should have done that. I should have got a little more detailed in here. But whatever the tax dollars we're spending on all of those expensive fire engines and firehouses and all that labor, they're going out here and they're putting 52 fires a week away, or a year away. Let's take 52 times 14,000, and it's $728,000. So it's about $750,000. I can assure you, boys and girls, that the budget for the fire departments of Boise, Idaho, is more than $1 million a year. I mean, I can just tell you that. I don't know how much more or how much it is, but it's going to be more than $1 million. Because every one of those firehouses is staffed by at least 6 people.
I mean, they got to have shifts 24 hours a day. These guys are on duty, see? And they're working 40 hours a week, 24 hours a day on, and then 24 hours a day off. So, you know, just the labor bill. And these guys get paid good, too. I mean, hell, they're getting paid. Hell, back in those days, they were getting paid $40,000 a year. I mean, that was a lot of money. All right, so you're going to have about $750,000 worth of fires every year. Now, there's 25,000 buildings in Boise, Idaho, and my building was $500 a year for the insurance package. It was more than just fire insurance. It was total insurance. But it was $500 a year. So let's take half of that, $250 a year for fire. There's 250 times 25,000 buildings, and we get $6,250,000 worth of insurance premiums. Some people are going to be paying more than that, but let's just take $6 million. So we've got $1 million worth of damage and $6 million. You know, that's, hey, boys and girls, hey, listen, is that profitable? Boy, you can bet your socks that that's profitable. So the insurance company pays out $1 million and they make $5 million on the transaction. So they got a cash cow that they're milking here, making $5 million a year. I don't know if that's unconscionable. I'm not here to suggest to you that fire insurance and the premiums you pay and the money that the profits that the insurance company is making is unconscionable. I just wanted to point out that it's just good business. I mean, it's a hell of a good business. So I figured if it's good for the insurance company, it's good for me. So I have the Gordon Insurance Company, and I carry the Gordon Health, Life, Accident, Fire, Auto. I carry all of my own insurance, and I take all the premiums that I would be paying out for all of these activities. Now, let's just take health insurance. The last time I went to a doctor was about 10 years ago. I went into the local Gainesville clinic. I had gout, and I had two x-rays taken. Cost me $75. 10 years ago, I spent $75. If I had been paying health insurance every year, I would have been paying about, at the 10 years ago, it would have been about $9,000, 10 left, about $12,000 now. So it's just rounded off to 10 for 10 years, $100,000. So I have $100,000 right now, today. I have $100,000 saved up in my health insurance annuity program. This is just little Georgie Gordon. Because I didn't buy any health insurance for the last 10 years. All right, so what would happen if everybody in America did that? Well, you wouldn't have any big insurance buildings. You wouldn't have any insurance companies. There wouldn't be any, none, zero, zilch, no insurance company. And all of the billions and billions of dollars that's being paid out now, today, in insurance premiums to all the insurance companies would be in the hands of all of the people of America. All of you people down on the Gulf Coast, instead of the insurance company having your money, you would have your money in gold coin. We hope buried in the sands of Galveston, Texas. Because here's the kicker. If you have an auto insurance policy and you have an accident and you have a $100,000 claim. Okay, here's a $100,000 claim. And you put in your claim, you say, okay, I had an accident and you owe me $100,000. Do you know how many people are going to collect that $100,000? What's the statistical average? If you said, well, everybody that has a $100,000 claim and they can prove it, everybody gets paid $100,000. Wait. No. Oh, that's not true at all. No, 9%. If you took 100 people with a $100,000 claim and they all went in and they could all prove their claims, 9 out of that 100 will get paid. 91 will not get paid $100,000. That doesn't mean they won't get paid something. They'll get paid something. But they're not going to get paid $100,000. They're going to get paid something less. Some will get paid $50,000. Some will get paid $25,000. Some will get paid $10,000. Some will get paid nothing. 9 of them will collect the full $100,000. And that's because the claims adjuster is trained for this. I was trained for this. I'll be the first one to tell you. See, I'm going to come out here and I'm going to tell you that I'm not going to pay you the full amount. So let me tell you a little story over here. I had a guy by the name of Emil Crow. Well, Emil was a claims adjuster back in the 1950s, and one day he got a call. He was a freelance claims adjuster. This is the profitable ones. And he was assigned a tier of counties by the Travelers Insurance Company that covered from Joplin to the Boot Heel, all the counties across the southern tier of Missouri, bordering on Arkansas. And this guy had an auto accident. Now, he had a big policy, $50,000, which was big back in the 1950s. And the damage was in excess of $50,000. They estimated around $65,000. It was a big damage. And Emil goes over to this guy and says, "You're in safe hands with Travelers." You know, one thing or another. Stalled this guy off for about 90 days. Then he came back and he said, "We think we have contributory negligence here, and we're going to pay you, and I'm authorized to pay you today $7,000. So I'm just going to write you a check right now for $7,000 and settle the whole claim, and you sign off." This guy was livid. So he went out and hired an attorney, which is what Emil wanted him to do, because remember, you know, you got two sharks here. Emil's one shark, and your attorney's the other shark, and these two sharks, you know, are going to divide up the pie. How does Emil get paid? Well, if you're a freelance claims adjuster, you get 50% of what you save the company. So the first thing you have to do is estimate what the costs are going to be. And they estimate is $65,000. So if this case goes to trial, the insurance company loses the whole $50,000 and you get a $15,000 deficiency judgment against it. All right. Now, if Emil can settle this claim for $40,000, then he saves the company $10,000. So he gets $5,000 and the company gets $5,000. See how that works? So in the fire business, you got to give a 10% kickback to the company. See how that works? Okay. Now, Emil goes out and he tells he's having, you know, conversations now with this guy's attorney. So he tells this guy's attorney that the policy limit's $20,000. That's a lie. The real policy limit's $50,000, but that's guarded. I don't know if you're aware of this, but, you know, as a claims adjuster, I can tell you right now that we guard the policy limit like a poker player guards his cards so that nobody else can see what he's got. So we guard that. And as a matter of law, you can't even get that on discovery. Did you know that? Yeah, have an accident and then on discovery, ask opposing counsel to give you the policy limit. Yeah. You ain't going to get it. So the insurance company, they're not dummies. You know, they go to the legislature, and they pay lots of money to the legislature to get laws passed. And that's a law that they got passed. So that you never know how much you're playing for. The insurance company knows how much we're playing for, but you don't. Isn't that special? I thought you'd love it. That's why I say, you know, this is a rip-off. It's a fraud. It's a scam. It's stacked against you, but, you know, you love it. You're used to it. All right, so now this deal goes on, and so Emil says to the other side, he says, "No, listen, I got to have some money left on the table. Out of the $20,000 policy limit, which at that time would have been a good policy limit, $20,000, you leave $3,000 on the table, I'll get $1,500, the company gets $1,500. Every lawyer that's dinking around here with an insurance claim knows how this game is played. That the claims adjuster is going to get paid out of what he saves the company. So we're going to settle out of court for $17,000. And you're going to leave $3,000 on the table, $1,500 for me for handling this and $1,500 for the company." He goes back and sells that to his client. Now here's the way the proceeds come down. Checks are written out at the closing. And the victim here, he gets about $12,000 because his lawyer is going to get one-third of the $17,000 settlement. How's that? If it was $18,000, the attorney gets $6,000 and the victim gets $12,000. Well, that's better than the $7,000 that Emil offered him. But it's a hell of a lot less than the $50,000 that was really on the table that the other side didn't know was on the table. So the deal is split up this way, 17 versus 33. So 33,000 gets split in half. So Emil Crow gets 17,500. Travelers pockets 17,500. and then they pay out $17,000. See how that works? Hey, isn't that special? God, I thought you'd love that. So when we're talking about insurance, boys and girls, we're talking about a ripoff. And when we're talking about the lottery, you know, the numbers racket. Back in 1900, there was a judge who wrote a treatise. I don't remember the case now, but he wrote a blistering treatise against the numbers racket. And he pointed out how it was siphoning money off of the city of New York. This is back in 1900 now. And how organized crime was ripping off widows and orphans. And siphoning off tax dollars, and God, he wrote a hell of a neat article, you know, about how wicked and evil and rotten and criminal this numbers racket was. Now, millions of people have been buying these lottery tickets for a lot of years. And so, and he talked about the millions of dollars that are siphoned off from the taxes and denied to the schools women and children are going hungry because this money is going to the lottery and going to the mafia and organized crime. And so it was outlawed. The lottery was outlawed, and then they had to do it undercover, you know, underground. And it was an illegal activity. And then one day, the state of New York comes along and says, geez, why don't we just have a lottery? We won't call it the numbers racket. We'll call it the lottery. And so today, I don't know, out of 50 states in the union, I think about 45 of them or thereabouts have lotteries. Let me ask you this. If the numbers racket, when the mafia was operating at 1900, was wicked and evil and rotten and a crime, and it ought to be abolished, and it was, and there was legislation passed and laws passed to abolish the lottery. Why is the lottery righteous and holy today when the state of New York runs it, but it's unholy and unrighteous when it's in the hands of private entrepreneurs, like the mafia? You know, it would look like to me that if the numbers racket is wicked and evil in the hands of the mafia, it ought to be just as wicked and evil in the hands of the bureaucrats of New York or California, shouldn't it? Now, your chances of winning the lottery, I've never bought a lottery ticket. They cost a dollar here in Missouri, and I've never bought one. If I live to be 110, I'm not going to buy one. And that's because the odds are 84 million to 1. Well, what that means is that I have to buy 84 million lottery tickets in order to win the lottery one time on average. Hell, if I had 84 million lottery tickets, I'd have $84 million. Boys and girls, if I had $84 million, I wouldn't have any need to buy a lottery ticket. So what they're holding out to you is the prospect that you know, Joe Sixpack, could be a millionaire tomorrow. Just buy a lottery ticket today. So they hold out this false hope to you. Now, it is true that there are people who do win the lottery. Yeah, that's true. They paid their dollar and they won $84 million, or they won $6 million or $3 million or whatever. Powerball pays a lot of money, but, you know, average, you know, is $2, $3, $4 million. And, yeah, that does happen. It happens once out of every 84 million tickets. And meanwhile, back on the farm, they're only paying out one every once in a while. So they take in $84 million and they pay out six. God, the lottery is immensely profitable for the state and for the mafia, and immensely costly for all of the players. But don't let me get in the way of you playing the rackets. Hey, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.